In this fourth audio of Teacher Leader Instruction for River of Life Scripts, we're going to be taking a look at a few of the particular confluence scripts in which there's some blue marks for the teacher to begin discussion. I just want to give you a little bit more information about those discussion points. So let's move to confluence number 9, which is about tree shrew. Confluence number 9, once you get there, you'll see that right at the beginning it says teacher. Before the script is read, ask the class when this confluence occurs. Now the answer will be 70 million years ago. That'll actually be shown. That's a standard place you'll see on the script where it's shown. You'll then ask the question, were there dinosaurs back then? Now, if it's 70 million years ago, the answer is going to be yes. Sometimes what I'll do in the prior scripts, just to give kids kind of a connection, whether I use the geological time scale or not, I just really want to make it clear for the kids that humans were not always living with dinosaurs, nor were our pre-human ancestors always living with dinosaurs. So, for example, when we have done the orangutan, I might ask, were there any dinosaurs at this time when our ancestor was living? No. Because many kids, there'll at least be a few in the class that know it was 65 million years ago. So continuing on with that teacher part is that you might make sure the kids know that for the first time, a confluence occurs back in time before the big meteor impact and volcanoes wiped out the great dinosaurs. So a question you could ask the kids, does this mean that some of our own ancestors had to live with T-Rex and Velociraptor? Point is to just kind of make it cool, get them a little scared there. Now, move to confluence number 12, Xenarthrins. You'll see the phonetic pronunciation right next to it, Xenarthrins, even though it starts with an X. And in fact, one of the things you'll notice in the slot when we get to the slides is that the songs, because some of these words are hard words, when I have songs projected on the screens, rather than spelling Xenarthrins with an X-E, I'll actually spell it with a Z-E-E. So that the kids can sing it. The phonetic ability is most important at this point. Now for this one, what I basically want to show you is that you see down in the blue teacher part, it says after the script reader is seated, click again. So you won't have clicked through everything yet. After the script reader is seated, click again to show the photo here. And it's going to be a photo of a giant ground sloth. And you'll simply ask, who is this? And once a class gets it's a ground sloth, or you might have to give them a hint about it and tell them that even though we're on this journey only with living creatures, this is the one place where I'm going to show you a photograph of an extinct creature. And so then you click again after they get giant ground sloth, and it'll show the name giant ground sloth. If you haven't already figured this out, you say, is it still alive? No. And so even though we are not meeting extinct creatures during this particular journey back through time, giant ground sloth is an exception because I want you to look close at its feet. Compare those feet to its cousin, close cousin, the living tree sloth, and that picture of the living tree sloth will be just to the left of it. For your own background, basically what happened is that the ancestor of giant ground sloth was a tree-dwelling creature, similar to the living tree sloths. Now, tree-dwelling creatures have different adaptations for, you know, what their forelegs and what their hind legs are going to be doing in order to be able to hold on to trees rather than walking on the ground. Because the giant ground sloth so recently came out of the trees, and because when its babies are young, they're still capable of climbing trees. And in fact, climbing trees is very important, or was very important for baby ground sloths, because that's one way they would have escaped from enemies like saber-toothed cats that were alive back then. Now, just like humans, once humans get grown up, and particularly if we put on a little weight, it's no longer easy for us to climb trees. So while children of humans climb trees, adult humans very often don't climb trees. So you might ask the kids, how many of you have ever climbed a tree? You know, how many of you have ever seen an adult climb a tree? And, you know, just to make that connection there. Now, the fun thing to do is to mention that evolution, they've so recently, the giant ground sloths have so recently come out of the trees, and also just because it's so important for the babies to still be able to climb trees, that the giant ground sloth can't run. Notice that it's actually from the picture, you can see it has to walk on the sides of its feet because it's still got the adaptation for the feet to be like hands. That is, being able to cling around the trunk of a tree or a branch, so it's turned inward. So at this point, I like to ask the kids to stand up and see what it would be like to walk on their sides of their feet. So this is a great point for them to be able to just kind of get out some energy and let them walk around or whatever you need. This might be a good place to sort of end this particular class if you're doing it on a multi-day session, but it's a fun thing to do. When you all come back down, you might mention that the way that the adult ground sloth protected itself, since it couldn't run, is number one, it was big, and number two, it had these giant arms with these humongous claws on them, and it could just reach back. If a saber-toothed tiger tried to jump on its back or its neck, it could just reach back with its claws and slice that predator. So anyway, I basically am still a 10-year-old mentally, and so that's why I think of these cool things. Okay. You'll see that the end of that is the song for Confluence 12. Okay, let's move to Confluence number 30 in your PDF of the teacher's leader scripts. Confluence 30 is Placozoan. And the reason I want to take you here is the script is rather long, but it makes a very, very important point. And that is, just explaining it to you, the Placozoan is a creature that thus far is rather isolated in its familial relationships. That is, we as humans, we have only one living species in our genus Homo, but in our family, we are also included in our family are the chimpanzees. So we start having connections that come out. The Placozoan is the sole species within its genus, and there's no other genera within its family, and there's no other families within its class, and there's no other class within its phylum. So this is an amazingly unique species. I mean, there's just nothing like this species on Earth. And so at the very end of the Placozoan, I have you ask this question. If a species of butterfly, you'll see this in blue under teacher, if a species of butterfly were threatened with extinction, and this species of Placozoan was also threatened with extinction, and your group of humans, had only enough resources to save one of them, which would be more important to save and why? Now, a lot of the kids will probably think butterfly, because butterflies are beautiful. We all love butterflies. But there might be one or two kids there that say, well, there's lots of different kinds of butterflies. But if the Placozoan were to go to extinct, even though it's sort of ugly and we don't really see it and it's a parasite, nonetheless, it would mean that a whole family is gone, a whole class, a whole phylum is gone. It's like so unique. So whether they get that or not, it could be an interesting thing. And if you have adults, that's certainly one you might want to ask. And again, there's no right answer, no right or wrong answer. Just have the kids start thinking about values in this way. Let's move to Confluence number 34, the fungi, pronounced fungi or fungi. I've heard it pronounced both ways. Now, I just want to point out to you at the very end in black, you'll see where it says, who is proud? You know, it's basically, who's proud to be related to a mushroom? There were several instances of this that came in earlier in the scripts, but as we're moving to the end, every single one of these confluences from now on out is either going to have the volunteer script reader or you as the leader asking the class that question of who's proud to be related to a fungus. Move to the next confluence, 35, amoebozoans. Who's proud to be related to amoeba? Confluence 36, plants. Who's proud to be related to a tree? And so on through the eukaryotes, the archaea, final confluence before the ocean of origin, 39, eubacteria, and then we're at the ocean of origin. So again, this is something, no right or wrong answer. If there are still students who are not proud to be related to a bacterium, no problem. Finally, move to confluence number 40. This is the last script, Ocean of Origin, and it continues the metaphor. Adults will get it. Children may not, and they don't need to. This is something that if I think it would be ideal for young children to experience in a group with older children. That is, the older children will be the ones participating, and the young kids, 4, 5, 6-year-olds, will look at their older peers and go, wow, one day maybe I'll be able to answer like that, or wow, I wish I could read. I'd like this program to be experienced multiple times by children in different ages, and then eventually when they're adults too. So once they become adults, they could then experience the program and go, oh, is that what that metaphor was about? So Ocean of Life, again, it's a metaphor that if we're on a river of life journey and the river keeps gathering tributaries and getting larger and larger, eventually it's going to empty into the ocean. And this is the great mysterious place. Now, in the you yourself or someone that you trust well and has a good dramatic flair, you'll want to call on to volunteer to read this this last script or do it yourself. And I want to call attention to the paragraph in there that starts, "One species among you has done something especially amazing." It comes toward the end. "One species among you has done something especially amazing. That species has dug up fossils, looked through microscopes, asked big questions, and thus discovered and learned the entire story of life. Thank you for learning my story." Now, what I'm trying to do here is obviously celebrate the scientific endeavor, but also one of the problems that can happen in an era of extinction, where children are exposed to a lot of bad news and bad things that humans are doing to one another and to other creatures and to landscapes and ecologies, they can start to get a little bit down on the value of our own species. I mean, it's good to have humility, but you don't want to just so knock us down that they see no point in our holding ourselves off from extinction. And this is one way to do it. This is something that has been emphasized by Thomas Berry and others who take a look at this great epic of evolution. And they say, you know, the role that the humans play here, at least in this sector of the galaxy, is that we are the first one that have the kind of hands that you can dig up fossils, that you can create tools, that you can then start having the culture move to a point that writing occurs and the internet occurs and all these kinds of things, such that no matter how much emotional intelligence or cognitive intelligence dolphins may have or parrots may have, no matter how much they may have, they don't have the capacity to develop technologies to learn Earth's story. We are the first creature in which this grand journey of evolution is being celebrated, in which the ancestors are actively being remembered. I mean, we're the first creatures to remember dinosaurs. Dinosaurs, just at least the non-avian dinosaurs, the non-bird dinosaurs, they're just extinct, and who else knows? They've been forgotten. Yet one of the wonderful privileges of being alive today is to remember not only our own human ancestors and to honor them, but to honor the more than human ancestors that came before. And yes, to be proud that we're related to a bacterium and to tree shrews. Now, just scroll back up to confluence number 5. I just want to point out for you something with confluence number 5. Confluence 5 is when I'm starting a program in which I have maybe 90 minutes or an hour where I want to use some scripts, but I can't use scripts for every single confluence. This is where I usually start the script reading, and I'll start it by modeling it myself. Instead of just talking through the slides extemporaneously, I'll actually pick up a script, and I'll talk about from here on we're going to sometimes have scripts, and I'll be asking for volunteers. And so then I'll model it. So I'll do this one, and I'll talk about how I'm working on confluence number, the confluence number 5, and then I'll just start off reading. "Hello, all you apes. I'm not an ape, but I'm still a primate. Guess who I am?" Moving on through it. Now, this one, it's got 5 asterisks. In part, I like to do this myself because this is the only one that's a little bit embarrassing. Below the picture of the colobus monkey there, you'll have the colobus. You'll be saying, "My group has asked me to speak to you because I have the prettiest tail of all. It is pure white and oh so fluffy. But what about all you apes? Let me have a look at you. Please stand up and turn the other way. And again, please stand up and have them turn the other way. Oh, I feel so sorry for you. Why did evolution take away your tails? And so on. So I'll model that one, and then the next one, move down to confluence. We'll take a look at confluence number 6 that immediately follows this. This has got 3 asterisks with it, and this is where I'll ask for a volunteer. And what I usually find is when I ask for the first volunteer, always the best readers and the most enthusiastically, instantly their hands will go up. And there will usually be at least 2 or 3 kids that instantly the hands go up. So I can be assured that even though I don't know the students personally, I can be assured that this first example of a peer modeling how easy it is to do a script will actually be done by someone who will be quite capable of doing it. That's it for the 4th audio. Please move to the next audio 5 for instructions. And before you call it up, make sure that you have the digital slideshow available for you to click on screen, because I'm going to have you go through it, certain parts of it, as I speak to you on the audio.